I would like to introduce tonight's speaker. And his name is Dave. Nope, that's not it either. Where is it? David. Yeah, his name is David. There's a lot of Daves on here. Okay, David P. from San Diego. Oh. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm David. I'm alcoholic. And I've been sober since June 21st, 1986. How about you? That impresses me a lot. You know, I got sober 2 years old like Barbara did. And actually, it was 22. And so I've grown up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just turned 60 last September. And I do not look 60, I do not feel 60, but in reality I am. The bad part about turning 60 is I'm no longer 59. I often say my sobriety date in meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous, and when there's attractive female in her 30s, they often say, "You've been sober longer than I've been alive." That's scary. You know, when I was looking at the booklet of all the speakers that have spoken here in the past decades, it's a tough act to follow because many of them I've heard over and over and applied some of their principles in my life. Did I say like drinking? Love drinking. As a matter of fact, they give me 3 bottle waters. Boy, that's pretty cool. Give it up to the ladies, the auxiliary. The spaghetti was absolutely wonderful. Yay. Every time I come here, I'm never disappointed. But every time I go to McDonald's, I'm definitely disappointed. So I don't go to McDonald's. I want to thank the folks that took time out of their life to come hear me speak tonight. It's really, really cool to look around the crowd. And many of you I've been in meetings with for decades. And some of you even showed up on time. We're not going to mention her name. So it's really cool to be here tonight. I was born and raised a really long time ago in a little town called Vero Beach, Florida, and I come from these square family. My mom was a waitress at this restaurant, and she was a very flirtatious woman, and she was a drinker, and she got a lot of attention from the men. And then my dad was the square. He was the one that was very stern, but very very stable. And he was a sheet metal worker at Piper Aircraft Company, build airplanes for a living. And I always wanted to get the approval from my dad. Never got it until many years in sobriety. And my mom decided to leave town when I was 12 or 13. But I want to back up just a little bit, tell you a little about my childhood. I was a bedwetter, and I couldn't figure out how come I was a bedwetter, but there was a lot of shame involved in it, and I didn't know why I was a bedwetter, but I was a bedwetter when I was a little kid. And the other thing that was going on in my life, I was a middle child, and anybody ever been a middle child, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, I had an older brother that decided to leave town quite a bit, and today I have not a clue. I haven't seen him since 1990, and so I got that going on where I didn't really trust, you know, I didn't get that brotherly love, you know. That then I got this younger sister, she's 2 years younger, and so she gets all the attention from dad, you know. So there's that jealousy going on, and I got all these complexes going on. And my mom decided to leave town to defend her right to drink when she was when I was about 12 or 13 years old, and she left town, and so I got these abandoned issues, and I got all these issues going on, and I'm restless, irritable, discontent, and I need a solution to that, and I ain't got a solution to it. I ain't got a solution. I was a good kid. I went to church, participated in the church, and felt really cool, you know, really great while I was participating, I was 18 years old, and my dad said, "What service are you joining?" And now, I don't know if he said that or not, but that's what I heard. And my last name's Patton, and there's a lot of proud Patton in the Army. And I don't color very well in between the lines, and so I joined the Navy. And I was in the Navy, and my company commander in boot camp in Orlando, Florida in 1981 says, "I don't know what's the matter with you. You need to get drunk or laid." And I hadn't experienced either one. I was 18 years old, and I hadn't experienced either one. And I found my first drink of alcohol in Orlando, Florida at SeaWorld. And it was just the magic. It took all that restless, irritable discontent, and it took it away. It did exactly what it was supposed to do for alcoholic. It was my solution, and I chased that feeling to the gates of death, to the gates of death. I was a Navy guy. I was a boiler technician in the Navy, stationed in Charleston, South Carolina. And we worked hard and partied hard. Worked in a hot environment, rough people, and the only way I knew to fit in with those folks, because I wanted to fit in somewhere. They used to drink beer from a beer bong. Will called his beer bong Otis. We didn't nickname ours, but so we would take the beer bong to the bars, and normal people do not drink that way. They just don't drink that way. So I carrying on like sailors do, and there was a girl in every port, I've been to many, many places, drunk and sober, but I can't really tell you about the experiences drunk, because I just can't remember them. I was a blackout drinker, constantly blacking out. Now, I was well-liked. I've always been well-liked. My perception of it was I was not fitting in. But the truth and reality is I was always well-liked. And the three stories I want to tell you is I had a brilliant ideal. I was about 20 years old, and we were in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and I had this brilliant ideal. My nickname was Papa Smurf. And I had a roommate that had a Papa Smurf on his rear end. He had a Rolling Stones smile on his rear end, and he kept flashing the women, and I wanted to be like Rick. And I had this brilliant idea that I'm going to get a tattoo of a Papa Smurf on my rear end. That would have looked great at 20, but at 60, I don't think so. Get to the tattoo place, and it was closed for lunch. It was closed for lunch. There was a speaker many years ago that used to say seconds and inches. I guess I was seconds and inches from destroying my life of getting a tattoo of a Papa Smurf on my rear end. The second story I want to tell you is, like I said, I was well protected quite a bit. I was well liked. I was a hard worker and protected by the command everywhere I went, and this one time I had this brilliant ideal. Not a brilliant ideal. One of the shipmates were out partying on a holiday, and we drive my car to the beach. This was in Charleston, South Carolina, and it was 17 miles from the beach to the Navy base. And we proceeded to get a little wasted that night, and what happened that night is he wanted to go back to the ship, and I wanted to stay, and he had the money. So he drove off and took my car keys from me. This was in Charleston, South Carolina, in May of, I don't remember what year, but it was May, and it was hot, extremely hot. The next day I wake up, there's no money. This was way before they invented cell phones. Matter of fact, it's way before they invented water bottles. And I'm walking and walking and walking and walking and walking, and I get back to the Navy base, and it's about lunchtime. They sent him out after me, and we get back to my car. He takes off, and I'm driving down the road, and I ran out of gas. Seconds and inches. If that would happen the night before, I don't know what would happen, but I ran out of gas, and I walked back to the Navy base again, and they sent somebody else. You know, stuff like this happened all the time to me, and they sent somebody else, and they wrote me up, and the chief's mess, the structure of the command, they had a good laugh on that one. There ain't no way this guy walked 34 miles one day, and I did. The third story I want to tell you is I had this other brilliant idea. I always have brilliant ideas. I bought a red Chevette. In 1984, I bought this red Chevette, and it was a pretty car, really pretty car. And I meet these guys outside this nightclub, and they said, well, you know where we could get some more liquor and women. I said, let's go. And as we're driving down the road, they said, pull over, and they stick a gun to my chest. And as they were driving off of my brand new 1984 red Chevette, I prayed to God, if he got me my Chevette back, I'd stop drinking. I've been sober most of that time since I made that statement. I still haven't got that Chevette back. I didn't know Ron back then, so he might have sold me a Chevette back then. But And a month later, I went and bought another Chevette, and it was white, and it was four doors, and it was a stick shift. And this is a symbolism of my life. I've never drove a stick shift in my life, but now I own one. 2 hours after I own a brand new car, I burn up a clutch in a car, in the Chevette. And I eventually learned how to drive the Chevette. May of 1985 was no different. There was this rock and roll bar in Charleston, South Carolina, where a lot of Southern rock bands got their started. And Tuesday night was drink and drown night. It was $5, drink from 8 to midnight, draft beer. And it was heaven for a sailor in 1985. And we did this every Tuesday night. This particular Tuesday night was no different than the Monday night or the night before. It was just no different. And what happened is I left that bar about 12:30 at night. I do not remember any of this. And I'm driving 85 miles an hour in a Chevette, according to the police report. And I hit a ditch embankment. I flew 65 feet in the air. And I landed on my left side, and I busted all my ribs. I had a crack breathing diaphragm. I lost a kidney. The other kidney was lacerated. I had a lacerated liver. Pancreas was lacerated, and I'm bleeding internally. And I was 21 years old. And they made a call to my parents that their kid may never make it out alive. And somebody asked me in a intensive care unit, there's a couple of things I remember about the intensive care unit, this is one of them. kid, do you think you got a drinking problem? I said, I don't think so. I'm never going to drink and drive again. And I could not see my life with or without alcohol. I was having a good time. I was having a great time. The consequences kept getting larger and larger, but I never left the resident where I was staying. I always went to the bar sober, and I had great intentions of not leaving sober, but not getting in trouble. You know, this time it's going to be different. And there was no issues, but some days there were quite a bit of issues, and the consequences kept stacking up. And I got admitted to the alcohol rehab after the recovery period, and it was a Friday night, and there was this really old person. She was 35. She goes, Dave, I know you pee in the shower. I don't know how she knew, but if you're new, we absolutely know. And that took my terminal uniqueness out. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous in Charleston, South Carolina. And it was just an amazing experience. But for me, I could only stay sober for so long on fear and fellowship. I could only stay sober so long on fear and fellowship. And what happened was a year later, I get discharged from the Navy, and I'm living in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm starting dating this young woman, and she's a psychology major from NYU, and I told my boss this, and I said, you know, I got this psychology major from NYU, and I'm dating her. And he goes, she has you for a summer experiment. And our next date, I told her this, and she goes, no, it's going to take a lot longer than a summer for you. That night was no different than the night before. The first night I drank after being sober a year. Congratulations on your birthdays. They're important. Armando and Phil and Liz, those birthdays are important. Keeping a sobriety day is really important if you're done drinking. You know, my friend Brian often says, I've been sober since the last time I drank. I don't know, these brilliant people. They come up with some brilliant stuff, don't we? So, now I lost my train of thought. Oh, so that night was no different. No different, and we were having a good time, and all of a sudden I decided to force feed her that drink. And that drink went all over her outfit, and she looked at me and she goes, what's your problem? And I said, I'm an alcoholic. And on June 21st, 1986, in Confetti's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I could see to my innermost self I was an alcoholic. And I've been done drinking since then. There's been no lurking notion that I could control and enjoy my drinking like a gentleman. There's been, and I'd like to tell you that I've lived a spiritual life ever since then. I've had a lot of miracles happen, and I'm going to cover a lot of ground in the next 20 minutes, a lot of ground. First of all, that night I got in another incident with the highway patrolman. And what happened was my hood on my Ford Mustang popped up, and I was in the center lane, and he did the field sobriety test, and he took me in, and I made a deal with a Navy recruiter. If he got me out of this, you know, if he would allow me to go into the Navy, well, if he got me out of that situation, I'd go back into the Navy, and I had to get a medical waiver signed by the President of the United States because I've got one kidney. And the doctors in Miami, Florida are shaking their heads. There's no way this guy's going back in the military. And I'm grateful I was able to go back in the military because I owed the military my life. I'm still unstructured, but I owed military my life. And so I went back in. I was 22 years old, and I would like to say I led a very spiritual life, but that's not been the case. And what happened for me is I went to meetings like this, and I would leave, and I was active, highly active when I wasn't out at sea. And I went to meetings like this, and then I would go into nightclubs, and I would spend a great deal of effort getting what attention was there. I owned a Camaro at that time. I dressed nice. I had money in my pocket, and I was just a ladies' man, I supposedly. And some of them were married, some of them were single, some of them were drinking, some of them were doing drugs, and my motives were totally whacked. And my spiritual life didn't change. And about 5 or 6 years sober, somebody says, well, why don't you try Alcoholics Anonymous? And I'm restless, irritable, discontent. And I said, I'm going to meetings. He says, there's more than going to meetings and going to meetings. And what happened for me was I started going to meetings. Lauren last week spoke about getting involved with young people. And I got involved with the young people, but I also got involved with some of the old timers. There was a group of us that floated around the meetings, and we just started enjoying life and got really busy in the service work, in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and about that same time, my life changed. My life changed. Everything was just calm. And about that same time, I got this wetsuit that I bought, spent about $100, and I got this thing zipped up at the front, knee pads are in back, the crotch pads in back. It's not fitting me, and it's a struggle to put on and off. It's not keeping me warm. I'm about ready to throw the thing in the trash can. And somebody yelled out across the beach, hey, dummy, the zipper goes in the back. And I didn't believe him. And I went and changed in the restroom, and I'll be gosh dang, it fit like a body glove. And that's the name of the wetsuit. Now, it's not on this cover of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but on the paper covers, it says this is a basic text for design for living. And if I was lived those 12 steps and all principles in all my affairs, everything in my life is going to be okay. And what happened for me was I started living those principles in all my affairs. I think Liz talked about that. My life started to change, and it really changed really drastically. But it's one thing to actually believe that, but it's another thing to actually live that. And what happened for me was about that same time I got discharged from the Navy, honorable discharge, and I was a proud sailor, and I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. I'm 29 years old or so, something like that, and I'm 5 or 6 years sober, and I have not a game plan. And somebody says, well, why don't you try for disability with the VA because you got one kidney? And they sent me to a psychologist, and the psychologist says, you've got some issues going on as a direct result from that car crash that happened in May in 1985. I was diagnosed with a traumatic brain injury, and I was told I was never going to be employable. I was told I was never going to be able to communicate. I was on Section 8 housing and Social Security disability for many, many years. And I enrolled in a brain injury class, and from there I springboarded into regular classes at Mesa College. And eventually I got a degree from San Diego State University, and wasn't sure I was going to work again, and I kept applying for jobs. I was doing a lot of volunteer work in between classes, and I was doing a lot of volunteer work outside the rooms of AA. I'm a derelict in society, and the more I give back to society, collectively, I'm better off. You know, I give back to society. One of the places I give back to, I donate blood, and I've been donating blood since 1992 when I got out of the military, and I'm up to 15 gallons. And I get these emails from the blood bank saying I saved three people's lives. you know, and they take my blood. And at one time, I needed blood. When you're bleeding internally and they can't operate on you because you're bleeding internally, and I'm a miracle that I'm here, you know, and so I give back to society as a whole, and there's various ways of doing that. So I started going, so I applied for a job. Lots of jobs, and eventually I landed this job with this agency, and I've been there for 15 years, and I'm highly successful at what I do. I help people get back to work, and I'm on the other side of that desk, and I'm really great at my job. And the person I was helping this last week, she goes, I get these bananas for being a top performer. She goes, how did you get those? I said, I'm just depending on other people's motivation. I wish I could motivate people to do what they need to do, but I can't do that. All I can do is supply the information, and so I'm doing that. Now, at 20 years sober, I'm feeling very great. I just got back off of vacation. I traveled the United States on a train, and it was an amazing experience. And I get back, and I'm driving this truck, and I get sideswiped. And what happened was the car got totaled, and I didn't have the insurance where the insurance company could go after the other people. I had liability. I was legally covered. And to make that long story short is the insurance agency called me up right before Thanksgiving and says, do you know how to drive a stick shift? I said, yes. And I haven't driven a stick shift in years, but I know how to drive one. And he has his secretary picked me up. Now, this is an insurance agent. And she picks me up. Well, I need to back up a little bit. At 20 years sober, that happened where I sideswiped and I started riding a bicycle. And this is the second time in sobriety I was riding a bicycle to meetings. And can I tell you, you know, I was 8, 9, 10 years sober, I was riding a bicycle every meeting all over San Diego County. And I had service commitments all over San Diego County. And I would get to meetings and people would take me home and stuff like that. And so the second time I was revisiting this concept because I didn't have any money. I was on Social Security disability. And so I'm revisiting that concept that I'm never going to be able to drive again. And the insurance agent says, you're buying a car today. And I'm like, as he's whipping out the money for the car registration, the insurance, the title, the whole nine yards, I said, how can I repay you? He says, just help others. Now, this guy knew my story because I would go into his office and talk to the secretaries and all that good stuff on a monthly basis. And he says, just help others. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool story. The impact that I have on others is amazing outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. God's grace, because I sure didn't deserve it. At 27 years sober, about 11 years ago, I'm driving in Northern California going to an AA campout, and I'm loaded. My car is loaded up. This is a different car. It's a car that I was financed because I was working. It is loaded up, and I'm driving up to go to an AA campout. And I get stopped by the highway patrolman. And the highway patrolman does this field sobriety test on me. And I was 1 week shy of, of 27 years sober. And I'm doing this field sobriety test, and he says, you're on drugs. And I said, I don't even take aspirin unless I got a headache. And so I'm scared. I don't know what a DUI is in California. I'm scared. My life just flashed in front of me. All that work to get to where I was at, all that work was gone within seconds of this police officer deciding to handcuff me and haul my car off and issue this ticket. And I get back home, and I call my dad, and I said, here's what happened. I said, Dad, I need to borrow some money, and he sent me the money. And I called this one attorney, and God is really, really cool. I called this one attorney that was very familiar with the district attorney in this area because he used to be a district attorney. He was very familiar with traumatic brain injury because he had one. And I met him in San Diego, which was a rare occasion to meet an attorney. Wasn't done, but that's okay. So I hired this attorney, and I'm talking to him. I show him my awards. I show him my, I just ran a marathon and showed him my 27-year token and the whole nine yards. He says, you're scared. I said, yeah, I am. This was a big guy. He looked like a gigantic linebacker. He was that huge. And he says, I got big shoulders. Give it to me. I'm going to take care of your problem. He says, I believe you. Now pay me the money, but I believe you. And 86,400 seconds, I was living in the now. Ken often talks about living in the now. And I was living that 86,400 seconds every moment of that ordeal. I've got a big God, and I better be living in the now with that big God. I better be giving that issue to God, whatever that issue is. And the charges eventually got dropped, but I had to go through like four hearings from July to December, and the charges eventually got dropped. And there's two angels that actually helped me heal from this, and one of them was Jeff. Jeff decided to, he says, do you want to go camping up there? So we went to another camp out, and Jeff drove up there. And then last summer, Mika and I drove up there, and we went camping with her and her fiance. And what was really cool is telling them that experience of that ordeal and them experiencing with me. And we don't have to do this alone. The last story I'm going to share is my favorite story that I like sharing. I've been all over the world. I've been a lot of the United States. I'm a national park junkie. And I had this brilliant idea, another brilliant idea, Michelle. I understand that your birthday's on the 21st, too. On June 21st of 5 or 6 years ago, I had this brilliant idea that I'm going to go hike the Grand Canyon. Now, I've hiked the Grand Canyon twice already. But I had this brilliant idea that I'm going to hike the Grand Canyon on June 21st in a desert. And it's 115 degrees. And I'm hiking and hiking and hiking and hiking and hiking. And now I'm alone, by the way. And it's 115 to 120 degrees. And I'm hiking and I'm hiking and I'm hiking and I'm hiking. And And I hadn't seen anybody in a while. And I'm like, God, I'm almost out of water. I'm getting scared. God, please help me. And about that same time, I step on some donkey poo. And I realized, for the folks who have never been to the Grand Canyon, there are actually people that ride down on the donkeys, down to the bottom. I can't imagine riding on a donkey for 8 hours, but they do. There's been like 2 deaths in the last 100 years. But anyway, so I followed that donkey poo down to the bottom, and I get down to the bottom, cross the Cooper River, Colorado River Bridge, and I've seen that bridge 3 times, and it's an amazing experience. And I get where the dorms are at, and that cold air of 100 degrees hits me, and all of a sudden, I said, I need to sit down, and I almost pass out. The rangers get some fluids in me, and not good. I walk around camp waiting for food. They feed you down there and nice, delicious steak and baked potato, the whole 9 yards. And I'm waiting, and this stranger, she was a school teacher from Ohio. She goes, you're dehydrated. I said, no, I'm not. I just had a gallon of water, a gallon of fluids. She goes, when's the last time you peed? I didn't have an answer. And that is a very important question to ask somebody in the desert. When's the last time you actually peed? Now, I got one kidney, so that's kind of dangerous. And she goes, you don't know how lucky you were, because the day before they healed somebody out of the Grand Canyon. A couple of gallons later, I was able to go use the restroom. Then the next day, I hiked out of the Milton very successfully, obviously, because I'm here. And I guess the point of that story is it took a complete stranger to save my life, even if I didn't think I needed my life saved. There wasn't any new people that announced themselves as new. So I guess we're all not new anymore. Some of you guys are old, not me. I'm in denial. But you just don't know which stranger is going to pop into your life. It could be somebody that's been around here a while, or you could be somebody that's just brand new that moved into town. You just don't know who is going to be your next best friend that may save your life, even if you don't want it saved, or even if you don't think it needs to be saved. Thank you for allowing me to participate.
Thank you, Dave. Let's see. Thank you, Dave, and I hope you come back soon, okay, and visit us. I'd also like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for the dinner tonight, and Dave appreciates it too. And Dave, if you will stand up and let us circle up or lead us out with the prayer of your choice. Thank you very much.